Contractors tend to stand by during election season, even though the party of the forthcoming administration is a reliable indicator of what procurement policy might look like. It might be tempting to do a little lobbying or contributions to a candidate. That's okay, but only under strict rules. We get more now from Justin Chiarotto, a partner at the law firm Blank Rome. Justin, good to have you back.
Great to be here, Tom. Thank you.
All right, so you have published a list of five do's and don'ts, I guess, for federal contractors. And I guess topping the list is contributions to political candidates. They can do it, but not with any old account, correct?
That's right. So we'll start with a recent decision, which I think is very significant out of the D.C. Circuit, and it's the Wagner versus Federal Election Commission decision. And it concerns the Federal Election Campaign Act, which actually, it's an old statute, it's about 80 years old, and it actually limits the ability of a person who enters into a contract with the United States government from directly or indirectly making a contribution to a political party, committee, or candidate for public office. So it's a fairly broad prohibition on direct political contributions, and several individual contractors actually challenged this as unconstitutional. And the D.C. Circuit actually upheld the ban, finding that the limitations were closely drawn to protect very significant interests in promoting both merit-based public administration and also to protect against quid pro quo corruption and its appearance. So a very, very important thing, particularly if you're an individual who receives a government contract or a business entity contractor. Now, there's an important exception here, and that is a corporation, and this is a bit of a confusing issue. A corporation is actually not prohibited from making political contributions, nor are its employees. So essentially, if you're a major defense contractor, you can still contribute directly to political candidates as an employee, for example, or through a political action committee of that contractor. But if you're an individual contractor, you're prohibited. So, interesting wrinkle there, and we could debate the policy ramifications of the decision, but very important for individual contractors to keep in mind.
So the D.C. Appellate Court, did they go against in some way the Supreme Court ruling that has been so controversial with respect to corporate contributions?
So Citizens United, I guess, is probably what you have in mind there. Yes. So and I think that's an excellent point. Importantly, which of course concerns money flowing into super PACs, which has become a real mainstay of the political climate. Government contractors are actually still prohibited from contributing to super PACs, and that includes corporations. So it still remains a very significant limitation on government contractors from participating in this recently upheld vehicle.
Because that appellate court did change complexion quite a bit under the Obama administration and the appointees that were sort of packed in there, but nevertheless, they do comply with the Supreme Court here.
That's correct.
Okay, so let's go on to lobbying expenditures. Companies can do that, but only under certain circumstances also, correct?
Yes, so the Byrd Amendment is what is important to keep in mind here. And the Byrd Amendment prohibits contractors from using federal funds for many, many lobbying activities. And it applies to covered actions, which broadly covers things like the award of a federal contract, making a federal grant or loan, entering into a cooperative agreement, and so forth. And it prohibits, again, the use of federal funds for those lobbying expenditures and also requires contractors to make certain certifications and disclosures that they have not used funds in violation of the Byrd Amendment's restrictions. And I think this is important to pay attention to. In the last couple of years, we've actually seen a number of civil actions from the Justice Department that have targeted suspected violators of the Byrd Amendment. And last year, a major contractor settled a suspected allegation of the violation of the Byrd Amendment, paying almost $5 million in civil fines. And the allegations in that case involved efforts to secure a follow-on to a multi-billion-dollar procurement. So it is an area that has been around a long time. It's part of the cost principles in the federal acquisition regulation. People should pay very close attention to it, and it's also something that's gotten a lot more scrutiny recently from an enforcement perspective.
We're speaking with Justin Chiarotto, partner at the law firm Blank Rome. Many companies, of course, have a K Street arm, if you will, and what I call a Northern Virginia arm, where they do sales and contracting activity, as opposed to lobbying that might be K Street. It's a good idea for those two sides to communicate, basically, so that they won't run into afoul of some of these statutes.
Absolutely. There's a lot of things out there to pay attention to. There's lobbying. We've talked about the Byrd Amendment, which can impact people outreach to executive branch agencies. You also have traditional requirements under the Lobbying Disclosure Act, which relate to congressional lobbying disclosures. Those are also enforced through the Justice Department here in D.C. And last year, actually, there was the largest fine ever lobbied against, no pun intended, a violator of the Lobbying Disclosure Act, a $125,000 civil penalty for folks that had not made their required disclosures. So you start to stitch these things together, and you can see that there are a lot of pitfalls that you can run afoul of if you're not paying attention, particularly a government contractor who is under such scrutiny needs to pay attention to these things.
And you've written to tell contractors to be sure that their employees understand company policies and that First Amendment rights are protected. So that's two different things, really. It sounds like some formal training might be in order at this point.
Yeah, I view these activities as something that should really be integrated into a company's ethics and compliance program. All of these things deal with the concept of improper influence and following the rules, and all of those things should really be built into the ethic of a company's compliance program. This isn't about restricting people's individual liberty, right? We want to promote that. We want people to be able to go out and participate in the political process. But we need to balance those against our obligations under federal law and regulation regarding contractor activities.
And it's a good reminder time, too, about gifts and gratuities.
Yes, 'tis the season. We often hear a lot of inquiries about this around the holidays, which are not too far around the corner. And both prohibitions that impact federal employees' ability to receive gifts and gratuities, and also things that can impact a contractor's ability to provide them. I think that the recent prosecution case of Governor McDonnell, is a great illustration of this, where there were some questions, for example, about whether or not certain activities constituted receiving something in exchange for an official act. And we obviously saw a lot of press about that. It went all the way up to the Supreme Court. But at the end of the day, you have a former governor who is in a fairly exigent situation coming out of office, and it's something where having a formal policy and maintaining it and following it might have prevented let's say if this were an individual government contractor involved in this situation, might have been able to head off a lot of very bad press. So, gratuity, a lot of rules, of course, that impact it and worth paying attention to as part of your compliance program.
Because even exonerated, the loss to reputation and the financial costs are huge.
Huge. And look, for example, there's a pretty well-known exception to the gift and gratuity rules for federal employees. It's called the 20 and 50 rule, that an individual can receive a gift of less than $20 per occasion and not more than $50 in a calendar year. Well, that's awfully difficult to track. It can have an appearance potentially of impropriety, even though it may abide by the rules. And so we typically counsel people to take a conservative approach on these things because nobody wants to be above the fold in a newspaper article.
Justin Chiarotto is a partner at the law firm Blank Rome. As always, thanks so much for that insight.
Really appreciate it, Tom.
You can read more and share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive and click share with friends.